background rate. That's dozens of species going extinct every day. Amphibians are hit hardest, with an extinction rate of up to 45,000 times higher than the background rate. In just 30 years, as much as 50% of all life on Earth could be gone. Scientists are blaming this mass extinction on humans, with habitat loss, pollution, pesticides, chemicals, plastics, and climate change as primary causes. It's imperative that all of us do our research and do everything we can to be a part of the solutions and not the problems. Visit ExtinctionDiaries.com to learn more. My name is Cheyenne Sunthunder, and you're listening to Extinction Diaries, a Small World radio production.
WBAI New York, 1 a.m. And it gives me great pleasure to present, without any faux-for-all skullduggery, the dustbin of history for this evening. And to report that the temperature has dropped 3 degrees in the last hour and is going even lower. Thank God.
There's some wonderful people overnight. I think Matt Schneid is brilliant, and R. Paul Martin is brilliant, but I don't know how many people get to hear them. And I want to say thanks. Tremendous job.
Well, thank you very much for that.
Thank you.
morning, and welcome to this edition of the Dustbin of History. I am your curator and janitor, Max Schmid, and we're back to our typical lineup. We have an episode for you of Nightfall, followed by an episode of Vanishing Point, and then, as ever, a rarely heard, not widely circulated episode of Gene Shepherd, never before broadcast over these airwaves. Today's show from August of 1963. So that's what we're doing for you this morning, and I think you will enjoy it. We're going to begin with Nightfall. We're taking them in sequence. This is the 32nd episode of the series from March 6th, 1981, called The Room. Yes, it's one of those challenges to stay in the horror room where everyone goes insane. So, with Graham Haley in the lead as well as writing the script, let's hear The Room. From Nightfall, from the CBC, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, on March 6th, 1981.
In the dream, you are falling, lost in the listening distance, as dark locks in. Nightfall. Good evening. I would like to reassure those listeners with tendencies towards claustrophobia that tonight I will be especially careful to take care of them. The play, adapted from a Michael McCabe short story by leading player Graham Haley, is called The Room. Welcome.
Do you like ice, Mr. Todd?
Ice? Thank you, Miss Watts.
Mrs. Watts, Mr. Todd.
Oh, I'm sorry.
There you are.
Thank you.
It pleases me to see a man savor whiskey.
Does it, Miss... Sorry, Mrs. Watts.
It does. My late husband, the Major, was partial to it.
Husband?
Yes. Do I look like a spinster?
No, not at all.
You seem determined to make me one. I am a widow. I have been a widow for 22 years.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Alfred was also fond of a cigarette in the evening. Would you care for one?
No, thank you. I don't smoke.
As you wish.
Well, cheers. It's a lovely scotch.
Atlas, one of the first ever produced in Scotland, and not generally available.
Oh, I'm honoured.
It's so long since I've been able to offer my whisky. I've had that bottle for more than 20 years. Poor Alfred was the last one to drink from it. He died the next day.
Oh, really?
Yes, ironic.
What do you mean?
The day before he died, he had a violent argument with Father Doyle. That's a long story. Suffice to say, the Major renounced his faith.
But why do you say it was ironic?
Well, he couldn't receive the last rites, could he, poor dear? Now then, are you willing to spend a night in the Yellow Room, Mr. Todd?
An unlikely partnership in ghostly research. Ronald Todd and Amelia Watts. He, young, brash, and very broke. She, old, self-serving, and wealthy. One could, in fact, well say that four walls are all they have in common.
Mrs. Watts, could I just get one or two things straight?
Of course.
I gather it's haunted, the Yellow Room.
So they say.
Who says?
People.
But nobody's ever stayed there all night?
Oh, yes, they have.
Oh.
Do you remember the sixth Duke of Wallingford, or was that before your time, Mr. Todd?
Duke of... Oh, yes, of course. The family bribed some famous psychiatrist to certify that the Duke was perfectly sane, but just the same, he was as mad as a hatter.
Quite mad. But he was as sane a man as one could wish to meet once. But that was before he spent the night in the Yellow Room.
You mean he...
The haunted and the haunted? Every man's history of ghosts and ghosting? He wrote those books, Mr. Todd. He lived and dreamed the spirit world. He was a hunter of ghosts.
And he came here?
He came. He stayed in this house, in the North Wing, in the Yellow Room. One night he spent 6.5 hours there. By morning, he was quite mad.
God.
Then there was Captain Bletchford of the 4th Hussars. He was found in the rose bushes 40 feet below, leapt through the window. Help yourself to whiskey, Mr. Todd. There were others who stayed in this room but saw nothing, because I believe they were not alone. It only happens, you see, when a person is entirely alone.
What is it that happens?
Oh, my dear Mr. Todd, if I knew that, I would not be offering £1,000 to any man who could provide me with the answer.
I see.
No one who has spent a night in the Yellow Room has been the same the next morning. Transformed.
Mrs. Watts, I must tell you, I'm not impressed by psychic research and I have no superstition.
Well, you are brave.
I'm an atheist.
So are the others.
You mean...
The Duke and Captain Bletchford.
Well, I wasn't always. I was brought up a Christian. And now I'm uncommitted, I'm afraid.
You're afraid?
Just a figure of speech. I'm not afraid. For £1,000, I'll spend a night anywhere.
I see.
One thing, though. If nothing happens, I'll have nothing to tell you, will I?
Well, in that case, you will receive £100 just for your trouble. Not an unreasonable fee for 8 hours' sleep, Mr. Todd.
No, but...
But I warn you, if nothing happens, don't invent. I shall know.
I am an honourable man.
Good. Well, having settled that...
I wonder if you'd mind telling me just why you're so curious, Mrs. Watts. What do you want to find?
I am an old woman. I have lived a long and wonderful life, but soon I shall die.
I hope not.
If I should be taken tomorrow, God forbid, I would go to my grave a disappointed woman, never knowing what evil dwells in the Yellow Room. There's going to be a storm.
Yes, yes, the air is stifling. Why haven't you spent a night in the Yellow Room yourself, Mrs. Watts?
10 years ago, I did. I went into the room and locked the door, had my rosary with me. Unlike yourself, Mr. Todd, I have a very strong faith.
And?
After 15 minutes, I unlocked the door and let myself out.
Why?
Mr. Todd, I did not ask you here to question me. And may I remind you that you have come to earn, if you can, £1,000?
Yes.
For that sum, you have a job to do.
Quite right.
After the job is finished, I shall question you. That is our working arrangement. Would Sunday suit you?
Yes, Sunday will suit me fine.
After all, you won't be in church. But you must meet Father Doyle.
Yes.
Oh, one thing I forgot. I shall lock the door to the Yellow Room once you are inside and settled. It will not be opened again until 8 o'clock on Monday morning. No matter what happens.
Yes. It's an obsession with Amelia Watts, the Yellow Room. She dreams of it incessantly. But even in her dreams, she's never been able to peer through the layers of faded wallpaper into the room's terrible secret. But enough of introductions.
10 of the broadcast stations of your area. Equipment that can quickly warn you during emergencies is being tested. If this had been an actual emergency, such as a natural or man-made disaster, official messages would have followed the alert tone. This station serves the New York operational area. This concludes this test of the emergency alert system.
I know that evil exists.
But I have experienced evil. I know how it works. The devil is afoot.
He is.
Don't grin, Mr. Todd. I ask both of you, because I know the history of this house, to seal the door, to lock and bar the yellow room.
Father, you seem to forget that Mrs. Watts and I have an agreement, a wager, if you like, for this one night. I'd rather you didn't persuade Mrs. Watts to seal the door just yet. Tomorrow, fine. But there's a small question of £1,000 in cash first. Then you can do what you like.
I only hope you know what you're doing.
I also know the room's passed. I don't doubt that whatever you say happened to the Duke and Captain... what's his name? Yet I can't accept that anything but their own imaginations made them lose their minds or jump out of windows.
I still say it's an unholy experiment.
No, Father.
Shall we get on with Mrs. Watts? It's 10 o'clock, and I've promised myself a few chapters of Evelyn Waugh before a good night's sleep. It looks like a splendid oak bed.
The sheets have been aired, and the pillow is as soft as snow.
And you won't have to worry about ending up in the rose bushes.
The rose bushes?
We had the window barred, Mr. Todd.
Well, I haven't come here for the view, have I? Now, Mrs. Watts, Father Doyle, if you don't mind, this is my room for the night. And according to you, my lady, the ghost does not walk unless the watcher is alone.
The yellow room is high-beamed. The shadows are deep. Light comes from only two candles. One is behind a great oak bed above the head of the man who sits reading a novel by Evelyn Waugh. The other candle is on a small table to the right of the door. The yellow room is deathly silent.
Time for bed.
Ronald Todd smiles. In imagination, he spends £1,000 on a multitude of wondrous things. And then, without warning, without the slightest movement of the room, the candle above his head goes out.
Father?
Ah, thank you.
You're quite sure you're not hungry?
Yes, thank you.
There's a kitchen full of food out there.
I'm really not hungry at all.
I enjoy watching a man eat.
Yes, yes. Hearty male appetite.
Well, a man should have one.
Speaking of the other male, our friend upstairs, shouldn't he be told to go home now?
What?
He's been up there 2 hours already.
He's not completed his bargain yet, Father.
But if he's going to be afraid, he'll have been afraid by this time. And if he's all right now, he'll be all right 6 hours later. Let him out, Mrs. Watts.
Father, I am not paying Mr. Todd for being afraid or for not being afraid. I am paying him to sleep in the yellow room and to find out what caused the deaths of 4 people and drove 3 others insane.
4 deaths?
Well, you know perfectly well.
I know nothing of the kind. The fellow who threw himself out of the window.
Father Doyle, what does it matter how many have died in Chancford? They were all free citizens, all of them old enough to vote.
I never knew there were 4.
Father Doyle, where are you going?
I think I'll go out and see how Mr. Todd's making up.
You will do nothing of the kind. Come away from that door.
May I have your permission to go up and see Mr. Todd?
Do I have to ask you to leave, Father?
My, my, Mrs. Watts. How authoritarian.
Father, you and I are old friends, aren't we?
We are. But I don't see that what that has to do...
Don't you?
Do I have your permission to check on Todd?
You do not.
Then I think you better order me from your house.
Very well. Will you kindly leave?
I don't really know what you're doing, but I warn you, if something evil happens tonight and there's an inquiry, I shall be bound to say what I know.
What do you mean, an inquiry?
Knowing full well there are evil forces in the North Wing, you hired a stranger to spend a night.
I do whatever I choose in my own
home.
Only
if it does not harm other human beings.
In this house I have complete freedom.
You're not exercising freedom. It's license. Bribing that young man with money.
Oh, for God's sake. There's nothing to harm him. It was all in their imagination, every one of them.
All merely imagination, eh? Then what can Mr. Todd possibly tell you that's reliable?
He can tell me what he experiences.
Or imagines he experiences.
Father, do atheists sleep well?
That's better. Bride's Head Revisited by Candlelight. I wonder if the spooky setting gives one extra edge. What?
The candle at the right of the doorway goes out.
That's strange. Well, must be a draft. I'll soon fix that.
The candle behind the bed goes out.
Pitch black.
He begins to feel his way around the wall.
What's this?
His hand brushes against a switch.
Try it. The light, it works. She said the wiring is... Lamp. Shattered. She must have been right about the wiring. I think I'll forget it and go back to bed. Music. Sounds like... Oh, come on, Todd. Just light a bloody match. Yeah, that one's lit. Now the candle behind the bed.
But before he reaches the bed, the room is shrouded in darkness as the candle by the door is again extinguished.
Oh, ruddy candle just blew out. Well, I don't need it anyway. Just this one. Oh. Where are the blasted matches? I spilled the whole box. That music. She must have a tape recorder. My old witch. Stopped. Always hated much music. There, it's lighted. Just one candle in this drafty old room. Like the little nightlight Mum used to leave in my bedroom when I was a kid. Stop that damn music! I'll light it again. Wish I had that nightlight now. All right. I'll play your game. Somebody else in the room, isn't there? Someone's playing music tapes and blowing the candles out. Fine. Let's leave it dark.
The depth of darkness and the drumming march cut through.
Try the candle by the door again. Oh, I need a match. Light. Wet. There's been water on the floor when I dropped the box. Once more. Nothing. There
There was a brave old soldier at the Battle of Waterloo. The wind blew up his petticoat and showed his cock-a-doodle-doo. Where's the blasted bed? Just make it back to... The bed's gone. This is crazy. What could it... All right, Mrs. Watts, you win. Built a trick room, didn't you? A maze with air vents and loudspeakers. One time, get your bearings. You're an old Boy Scout.
And in the blackness, like a blind man, he walks cautiously, his arms groping in front of him. The way feels clear. He bumps into nothing. Then...
Straighten up, Todd. Look sharp.
Who's that?
Sloppy, Todd. Very sloppy. Smarten up, boy.
Huh? Where are you?
Can't have any slackness here. Come along into line.
Very good. Nice trick, Mrs. Watts. A tape machine, too. Who's it supposed to be? Your husband, the Major?
She's not listening. And there's no tape machine. But you're right on one count. I am the Major.
Oh, sure. Sure, of course you are. If only I had some light.
Some of us refuse to see the light.
What do you mean, us? Get hold of yourself, Todd. You're talking to an empty room. Us?
Those of us in purgatory, Mr. Todd.
Rubbish. Where are my matches? There must be a dry one somewhere. Let go! Damn you, Major! Those are my matches. Now give them back. Do you hear me, Major? Give them back.
So, you acknowledge me after all?
Never. You're a fraud, whoever you are.
Not a fraud. A ghost, to be precise.
I don't believe in ghosts or spirits or the living dead or the devil or any of that bunk.
What do you believe in?
Nothing. What's your game? What do you want?
A favor. A little one. I only want your faith.
I have no faith.
Pity.
Even if I had, I wouldn't help you.
No pity.
What do you want it for?
Your faith for my redemption.
What would it really take to redeem you? Maybe you deserve the Yellow Room.
You're a stubborn man. Just like all the others.
I will not be used. I'm getting out of here. If there is a purgatory, it must be this bloody room. Mrs. Watts! You can keep your filthy money! Open the door!
I'm afraid there's no escape.
Mrs. Watts! Let me out!
Might as well say your prayers.
Come on, it! The window.
It's only a 40-foot drop. Once you've got through the bars.
Who are you? Why are you hounding me?
Ronald, what would your mother say?
My mother?
Ronald, dear, time for bed. Say your prayers for Mummy.
Mummy!
Be a good boy now, Ronald. Say your prayers, and Mummy will give you back your toy soldiers.
Mummy! Mummy!
Sing, Ronald, sing for Mummy!
Light the little candle. In the night, in this world of darkness, so let us shine. You in your small corner, and I in mine. You always were a nosy old devil, Father Doyle, a saving your reverence,
no,
of course.
No.
You always were. You just hide your nosiness under a cross.
I woke you sharp at 7:30 because I was concerned for his safety.
Of course.
Open the door to the yellow room, Mrs. Watts, quickly.
But yes, yes, Father, be patient. Good morning, Mr. Todd. Would you like some tea?
Give me the keys, woman.
Well, in all decency, I have to warn him we're entering.
No time for niceties.
Soldiers back. In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. Amen. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee.
Blessed art
thou in heaven. Blessed is the fruit of thy womb. I was saying it right. Stop it. Leave me alone. Go be. I hate saying my prayers. I hate it. I hate it. Stop it. Stop it.
Dear God in heaven.
Ronald Todd was committed to an institution for the incurably insane. Father Gerald Doyle visits him twice a week. The old priest carries a profound sense of guilt he can never be rid of. Mrs. Watts died last year without ever discovering the secret of the Yellow Room. Chanceford, her rambling old mansion on Manor Drive, is to be torn down this year to make way for a shopping center.
That I declare the Chanceford Mall officially open. Yay! Now we have a special program for you today, and I'm... Hello. Can you hear me, folks? Please, folks, stay calm. Just a temporary power cannon, I'm sure. Come on, the lights on again in a minute. Now, keep going, please. Jim, see if you can rustle up some candles.
You have just heard The Room, the Michael McCabe story dramatized for radio by Graham Haley. Graham Haley was also featured tonight in the role of Ronald Todd, with Moya Fennick as Mrs. Watts, Colin Fox as Father Doyle, and Chris Wiggins as The Major. John Stalker was the shopping center MC, and vicarious narration was provided by your series host, the mysterious Luther Cranst. Our recording engineer is John Jessup, with sound effects by Bill Robinson. Our production assistant is Nancy McElveen, and the series story editor is Earl Toppings. Nightfall is produced and directed for CBC Radio by Bill Howell.
And that was the 32nd episode of Nightfall, The Room, here in the dustbin of history on WBAI New York. We turn next to the series that followed Nightfall. Nightfall had a good 4-year run in Canada. And then after a brief hiatus, it returned as Vanishing Point, which focused more on science fiction. This coming one, more of a Twilight Zone type of fantasy. It's the 14th episode of the Vanishing Point series from December 28th, 1984, called The Lost Door by Stephen Petch. A middle-aged man discovers his home has vanished, and he's lost proof of his existence. Now, we were trying to take Vanishing Point in sequence as well, but I looked back at some of the surviving episodes and realized that we had missed quite a few. Actually, I downloaded something that was supposed to be the episode following this one about an all-female planet, but it turned out to be just another copy of this one, The Lost Door, which is why we're hearing it now. And if we ever find that other episode, I'd love to hear it and play it for you, but I don't know if it's going to turn up. Fortunately, most of the Vanishing Point shows exist in one form or another, so we'll get to hear more of them as the days and weeks and years roll by. But now, episode 14 of The Vanishing Point, The Lost Door, here in the dustbin of history, WBAI New York.
Reality is habit-forming. You phone home, a familiar voice answers. The file is where you left it, on the desk. You drive the same route to work and back each day. You could do it blindfolded. That might even be safer. Because while your eyes are open, there is always the chance you might be distracted from the well-trodden path. Distracted by that doorway, which is not a doorway. The Vanishing Point.
We have another beautiful spring day on the coast.
Yeah, 17
degrees great. At Vancouver Airport.
Right here in the middle,
and more of this to come on the weekend. Sunny skies will prevail over most of BC, except for some broken cloud in the far north.
Hey, come on, lady.
Oh, it's not so nice everywhere, though. In Ontario, a late winter storm has buried Toronto under 60 centimeters of snow. Just think of those poor easterners up there. You know what?
So choose one lane or the other, will you?
Turning to traffic.
Oh, yeah. Volume
delays on most major streets. And a holdup reported on the Lions Gate Bridge.
No, you tell me.
I can't quite make this up due to a man threatening to jump from the bridge. Police are on the scene.
Jump? What a time for it. Oh, there he is. Just a kid. What's he got to jump for? Oh, correct! What are you, a tourist? Gotta stop and watch? Hey, where'd you go back there? Did he jump? He must have. Gee. I hope they got a boat or something to pick him up. The creek. That's what I want. Nice, big, gin, dark, fresh line. Sit out in the yard. When did I get those lights in? Must have been just today. I don't remember them. Well, great way to start the weekend. Run at light and hit someone. Okay. Almost there. Is that your car?
Yeah, well, it's my dad's.
Well, would you mind moving it? There's plenty of room on the street.
Why should I move it?
I'd like to get into the driveway. I live here.
Huh?
Who are you anyway? One of Janet's friends? I've never seen you before.
I think you got the wrong house, mister.
Oh, maybe Laura's. That's it.
I don't know any Janet.
Just move the car, will you?
Look, this isn't your house.
What are you talking about? I've lived here 15... What, man? Wrong street or something? Where's...
You feeling all right?
Yeah, just a minute. No. This is it. There's Jack's place. Church.
You look sort of funny.
So where's my house? Where's my goddamn house?
Dr. Erickson, I'm on call.
Oh, yes, doctor. Come in.
Here she is, Sleeping Beauty.
Yes, it's me. Hi, Jamie. Hello, Mary.
Good morning, Doctor.
You look a little rough around the edges. Not a great night?
At 4 a.m., this is what you get. Was it you that called me in? I should have known.
Hey, you're on the list. Everyone else is in Hawaii.
Uh-huh.
I've got a whole floor to look after. I can't spend all night in the cells.
I wish you'd stop calling.
A joke.
All right, okay. So, what do you have for me, Dr. McRae? Who do you have?
Where the hell are you?
Well, it's a man. Mid-40s, I would guess.
Was that him?
You got it.
Oh, wonderful.
He was arrested for creating a disturbance. When he didn't sober up, the police brought him to us. We have him restrained now.
Was he violent?
He gave us some trouble. Here's his chart, what we have.
No name.
Not a real one.
Oh.
What's the matter?
100 milligrams of Thorazine?
Not subtle, I know.
And he's still shouting.
Yes.
Oh. Is he a heroin addict?
Well, there's no sign of it. We have a test in, but...
And he's just hysterical.
That he is.
One of the aides is with him, Doctor, if you want to have a look.
Yes, I'd better.
Well, I'll leave you to it. Have fun.
Yeah, thanks.
This way, Doctor.
Yes.
Yeah, right here. I just went for some coffee.
I asked you not to leave him.
I was just gone a second. Really? Hiya, Doc. You going in?
Yes. Maybe you'd give me a minute on my own.
Sure.
Hello? My name is Dr. Erickson. They've asked me to look after you. I'm sorry, I don't know your name. Would you like to tell me? It would help me make contact with your family. Only if you want. Can you hear me?
Sure, I hear you.
Good. Mister...
I don't want to loosen these.
Pardon me?
The straps. I can hardly breathe. Just a little. I'm not sick. I don't need to be in this bed.
Let's talk for a minute, and I'll see what I can do. All right? Now, will you tell me your name?
It's Borman. M. Borman.
I'm sorry, I don't believe that. You want to try again?
You know my damn name.
No, I don't.
Well, just loosen these straps, will you? I feel like I'm dying.
Name?
Davis.
Davis. All right. First name?
Art. Arthur. 550 Mathers. 922-5019.
Very good.
Hey, where are you going? Let me out of this thing. Just my arms. Hey, I just want to smoke a cigarette.
Danny?
Yeah?
I think we can let Mr. Davis have an arm for you, don't you?
Sure, if you want. Which arm, pal? Right. Oh.
Is that better?
Oh, yeah, thanks. Well, what are you doing?
I'd like to take your pulse, if you don't mind.
My pulse? What?
Danny, will you ask Mary to bring you the...
Get your hands off me, bastards! Let me out of this thing! Let me out! Let me out of this, you damn thug! You...
Held on 3 cc's.
All right.
Let me out of this.
Sorry about that, Doc.
No, it was my fault.
You okay?
Yeah, wide awake now.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Who is this person? Has he been in here before?
I've never seen him.
Oh, he gave me a name. Will you take this upstairs and have them run a records check for me?
Sure.
Now, have them start with the city and go on if they need to.
Yeah, will do.
How is he?
It's taking effect.
Good.
I'll get someone to clean up.
Hmm.
Would you like some coffee, Doctor?
In a minute, thanks.
Okay.
Mr. Davis? How are you feeling now?
Sleepy. Tired.
Good. I think you need some sleep.
What? Gone, I told you.
Pardon me?
Gone. Disappeared. Everything. House, Martha, kids. I go home and...
Your house is gone?
Yeah.
Well...
Some strange people living next door. Who are they? Say they don't know me. I've lived there 15 years. Built the damn garage.
When did this happen?
When?
Last month? Yesterday?
Yeah, yesterday. I get in the car, go home, and it's not there.
Uh-huh.
Left work, go in the car.
Work? Where do you work?
Real estate. Rim Real Estate. Downtown on Georgia. 1036.
Who can I call there?
Yeah. I called Doc. McClure. You'll find him.
McClure, all right. Good.
Oh, yeah. Tired now. Going to sleep.
You do that. Jamie? It's Liz. Sorry, I've got my mouth full. You called me?
Yeah, where are you?
I'm just at my office, having some lunch.
Oh, okay. Well, I've got some information for you with reference to last night's arrival.
Oh, good.
Maybe. First of all, from records, no Arthur Davis, no A. Davis, matching the description, was a psychiatric patient in a provincial hospital in the last 12 years.
Really?
We could go back further, but those records aren't on computer, and the staff won't be pleased.
No, it's probably not necessary.
Also, the police came around and gave me their end of the story.
Oh, yes?
They picked him up in West Van, apparently. He was trying to force his way into a house. No one in the house had ever seen him before.
This was on Mathers Avenue?
Yeah, that's right.
He claims he lives there.
Well, he doesn't. Not only that, but the car he drove up in was stolen from a parking lot yesterday afternoon.
I see.
So, quite the character you've got here. Any idea what's wrong with him?
Not yet.
Any instructions?
How do you mean?
Well, medication or...
Jamie, I haven't even seen the man when he wasn't drugged to the eyeballs. Give me a chance. Give him a chance.
Okay, okay. See you later.
I'll be in.
This is all a trick, isn't it?
Pardon?
The whole thing. I know how you did it, too. The scotch in my office. You put some drug in the bottle. I thought it tasted funny. You hypnotized me, made me think I was driving
home. I did all this?
You and your comrades, sure.
To what end?
Because you're KGB or CIA. You're trying to brainwash me, turn me into your agent.
What an idea.
It's true, isn't it? I've read about these things.
Mr. Davis, do you know where you are? The psychiatric ward at Vancouver General Hospital.
Sure, that's where you do these things, just like in Russia.
I see. And why did we pick you?
How should I know? You've got your reasons.
I assure you, none of this is true.
Then what am I doing here?
We assume you're suffering a psychotic attack. You were arrested for assault, and since you've been here, you've displayed bizarre and aggressive behavior and consistently lied as to your identity. Now, until we know who you are and what's wrong with you...
You know damn well who I am. You know everything about me.
Mr. Davis, none of what you told me checks out. You don't live at 550 Mathers. There is no Rim Realty, no Doug McClure who knows you. No medical records, no birth certificate, no driver's license, nothing. Either everything you've told me is a lie, or you don't exist. Which is it? Well?
Give me the telephone.
Why?
Just give it to me.
All right.
This is a trick, isn't it? There's one of your people on the other end.
Do you really think we have them budget?
Yeah, who is this? Who are you? I want to talk to my wife, goddammit. Put her on. What?
It might have been a wrong number. Do you want to try again? Mr. Davis?
No, damn you! What are you trying to do to me? Where are they? Where did you take them?
Who?
My wife, my kids. They were there. What are you... Cigarette, will you?
All right.
The other pocket. Yeah. Thanks.
What's this? Pocket, part of a newspaper.
Oh, yeah. It's one of our ads. You see? Art Davis, commercial industrial real estate. That's yesterday.
I see. Mr. Davis, if I'm going... questions as truthfully and completely as you can. I want all the details you can give me with your name. Who are you?
Arthur Davis.
Any middle name?
Yeah, William.
Date of birth?
May 20th, 1935, in Regina.
When did you come to B.C.?
Later on. In 64, I think. We drove out. I had this old Plymouth.
You were married at that time?
Oh, yeah. We had our first daughter. Oh, yeah. Oh, it was beautiful. The mountains. I always wanted to go back, try climbing some. Maybe look for gold. Who knows?
So I told him to shove it and quit. Then we started our own office. Made a lot of money till the market went dead.
Want to hear more? There's another tape.
No, thanks. That's enough for me.
What do you think of it?
What's to think? It all sounds very normal. Dull. Somebody's life.
Except that none of it checks out.
Hmm.
Not one detail. Even this newspaper clipping, it's not from any paper I could find.
You made it all up?
I suppose he must have.
Well, it's not so unusual, is it? Imposture is an element of paranoid schizophrenia.
But this is different, Jamie. His story is so complex and consistent. And banal. I mean, a schizophrenic might assume of a mythic personality. God, Christ, Napoleon. But a real estate salesman?
So, he's an unusual case.
Unusual? The indications are so contradictory, I don't even know where to begin.
Well, are you ever completely certain? There are always contradictions, unusual elements.
Mm.
You just have to blip over them and go with your best judgment.
Yes, I suppose so.
Either that, or take his story at face value.
How do you mean?
Assume it happened as he claims. He left work, went home, and it had disappeared. Everything was changed.
Ah. Well, it's a child's dream, an archetype. You go home, but it's not there. It prepares you for separation, death of the parents. I know I had it when I was a girl. Very upsetting it was, too.
Hello. Here she is. When? All right, thanks. You're Mr. Davis. He locked a nurse in a closet, walked out the front door.
So rain, why don't ya? Singing in the, just singing in the, what a glorious, hey, watch it, you want to drown me, idiot, yeah, wet, pretty wet, somebody stop and take me to a bar, hey, hear that? Stop and pick me up. Hey, lady. Ah, you know, lot. Yeah. Oh, get cold. Get a drink or something. Where's the damn bar? What a city, eh?
Pouring the rain. Where's the drink? There's something. Cars.
Stop a minute, why don't you? Hey, let me get across.
Feels so good.
It let me by.
Can you hear me?
What? Martha?
No, it's Dr. Erickson.
Who? Oh.
Do you remember me?
Oh, sure. Where did you say? Where?
You were back in the hospital.
Oh, yeah.
You're lucky to be anywhere alive.
Am I? What happened?
You were struck by a car. Apparently, you were walking down the middle of Georgia Street. You don't remember?
Yeah, I guess so. The street, the cars.
Yes.
You know, Doc, it's funny.
What is?
I think I figured it out. That afternoon when everything happened. I remember now. I left the office, went out the door, and started to go to the elevator. Then I passed the stairs and I thought, I need the exercise, I'll walk down, so I did.
Yes?
That's it. The stairs were never there before. They're at the end of the hall by the washroom. But Friday, the stairs were right in front of me, so I went in. After that, everything was different. It was all changed.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you figured it out.
Yeah, me too. Me too, Doc. I don't know what good it does me. I can't find the stairs again if the whole building's gone.
Maybe it's a start.
Could be. Could be.
Yes. Oh.
Liz, wait till you see what I've got for you.
Money? Airline tickets?
Nope, even better. Listen to this. See what you think. Male, Caucasian, age 49 years, brown eyes and hair, height 5 feet 11, weight 210 pounds, married, 2 daughters. See what I'm getting at?
No, but go on.
This is a missing persons report from Ontario. Last seen January 15th in Toronto. Left work at real estate office. Disappeared.
And the name?
Alan Davidson.
Davidson. It's close. Oh, but how likely is it that
there's a photograph. Not a good one, but have a look. What do you think?
It looks like him. May I keep this?
Sure. I've asked them to send more information so we'd be sure.
I'll take this down to him, see what happens. The photograph may start something. I don't know. He's built up such an elaborate story, I doubt he'll want to let it go.
Okay. Let me know, will you?
Will do. Thanks. Hi, Mary. How's it going?
I'm fine, thanks. You?
Oh, about the same. Quiet night?
Mm-hmm, yes. Do you have business here today, Doctor?
Well, just checking in. I'll talk to you later.
All right.
Hi, Danny.
Hey, Dr. Liz. Long time no see.
Oh, sure. It must be 6 or 7 hours, eh?
What?
Just joking.
Oh, yeah. You looking for someone, Doc?
Yes, my patient. Did you move him?
Your patient? Who's that?
Mr. Davis, or whatever his name is.
Davis, eh? Geez, I don't think I know him. He just come in?
No. What do you mean you don't know him? You were here the night he arrived. He knocked over the table.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Is this a joke? What have you done with him?
I don't know what you mean, Doctor. Maybe you should ask Mary. She'll know. Come on.
What in the world?
Hey, Mary, do we have someone called Davis? Mr. Davis?
Yes.
Davis? No, there's no one by that name.
Our John Doe, then. You know who I mean. I visited him last night, for God's sake. Have you lost him since then?
Last night? You must be mistaken, Doctor. I was on duty. I don't remember. Your name isn't in the logbook.
What are you talking about? I've been in here every day since... What?
I haven't seen you in several weeks, Doctor.
Weeks?
Me neither, Doc. Not since that kid last month.
This is unbelievable. Jamie's put you up to this, hasn't he, Dr. McCrae? Well, get him on the phone. I don't think it's very funny. Well, call him.
Dr. McCrae's on holiday in Hawaii.
He was in my office an hour ago.
I don't think that's possible.
Well, possible or not, he was there. He gave me a missing persons report on our Mr. Davis. Look, I've got it right here. Here. Is it just my paper? Well, I know I put it in here. It's... What is this? Where?
Don't worry about that lady over there.
What's happened?
The door closes behind you and is no longer there. It is difficult to say if you are locked up or locked out. But either way, there can be no return once you have stepped through the vanishing point.
The Vanishing Point from the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation on December 28th, 1984. Episode number 14, The Lost Door, here in the dustbin of history. Well, it's time now for our Lost Gene Shepherd episode. We bring you one every week. This one not entirely lost. On the other hand, I looked around online and I don't see it in too many places. So you could listen to it at Flick Lives, the Gene Shepherd website. But it's not on YouTube, and it isn't widely out there, so... And why? Because we've never played it before on this program, or the previous program, Mass Backwards, where 20 years of Gene Shepherd have found their way into circulation. Well, this one is from August 8th, 1963. It's called The Insanity Sessions and Cross Country Run. So let's listen to Gene Shepherd. Sounds like an FM air check. Nice, clean, crisp sound. So let's hear Old Shep from August 8th, 1963 to wrap up this edition of the Dustbin of History. Yeah.
reminds me of when a chick looks at you and says, but we'll always be good friends. That's also the same kind of comment they make about the short, fat girls with pimples, but she has a very nice personality. She's awful broad of beam, but her eye sparkles. Interesting world of Gene Shepherd. What the hell? What is this? A radio station? Call it the radio. Oh. Find my world interesting. That reminds me of Phil Tonkin, who always comes on and says, now the world of news. Is this that separate from the world? You know, it's another world of news. Kill it for crying out loud. Have you ever had the feeling that it's all carved out of a bar of Ivory soap and it's 99 and 44 100% pure, but oh boy, that 56 100ths of a percent that ain't pure, oh, look out. Yes, stay tuned for the gingerbread men who follow in just a moment with raisin eyes. Listen, currents for buttons. Stay tuned. This is the interesting world. Well, all right, it is interesting. Now, as long as we've got to do it now. See, he's put it right up to me. He's put it plainly up to me. I have to make my world interesting. Why, is my world different from your rotten world out there? Huh? Why, what kind of a world you live in? I suppose, well, I don't know, for crying out loud. There's something that's been bugging me for about the last 24 hours. Well, actually, let's say the last 400 years, to be honest with you. The first time I realized that I was being bugged, that we'll keep that for later. After the station break, when the women and children have left, we're liable to say it tonight. I mean, what a kick in the thing that was. Interesting one, crying out loud. And stay tuned for Jovial Laugh a Minute, friendly, reliable, sober John Gambling. He'll tell you about the news. He's very good on the time. Well, we'll be here, and we'll be here, you know. It's very hard. It's a funny thing. The other night, there was a German girl listened to the program, a friend of mine, saying, and she says, I was understanding all of everything that Mr. Shepherd was saying, but I could not figure out why he was laughing. And there ain't a single man jack of us, not a single man jack of us Americans who did not know why I was laughing, you know. It's just it's the joke, you know. The joke, chick, girl. Yes. I guess that's the difference between us and the Europeans. They don't know about the joke. They take it seriously. It's funny how many people, they take things very seriously. They really believe that a playwright is saying something about the world over there in Europe, you know. Yes, indeed. Well, I was not understanding what he was saying there, but for heaven's sake, oh, forget it now. All right, cut it out. That stopped you, didn't it, baby? Anytime you start blowing something out through your nose, the chicks will listen. When it comes out of your head, they don't know what you're talking about. Very true. Do you want me to try another chorus of that? I haven't blown the nose flute. Now, wait, hold it there for just a minute before we go any further. There's something that has been bugging me now. Let's see. I will award the brass fig the gee for anybody who can get me off the hook. This has been really a pain in the thing tonight. No, I'll tell you what happened. This afternoon, I'm sitting in the middle of an important meeting. Now, check, listen to this now. I'm sitting in a very important meeting, see? And everybody's making the sounds, you know, they're making important meetings, and girls are coming in with coffee, you know, that kind of thing. And everyone's pretending like it's serious, and they're nodding. I have trouble in meetings like that. I really do. There's a look in the eye. You'd be surprised that when I first came here, Now, those of you who might not know this, I'll tell you some ancient history. When I first came at WOR to WOR, they thought I was, I don't know what it was, they thought that I believed it too or something. I had a look in the eye, maybe, I don't know what it was, maybe I was skinnier or something, but they, or fatter, I think it was. But when I came here first at WOR, they used to seriously say to me, well, got a very good idea about you following John Gambling in the morning, and you come out with these records, show tunes and stuff. Well, I would sit there in these meetings, and it began to develop, apparently, it was a mutual thing, you know, mutual distrust builds very easily and rapidly, that somehow I wasn't with it. I don't know, and it was graphically, I thought I would grow out of it, you know what I mean? I thought I would grow up to be Bill McCormick. And begin to really, you know, believe in sales and all that stuff and the charts and to really seriously read Advertising Age and really honestly and seriously read it. You know, I think a kid reading Mad Magazine is getting more information about the world, and certainly he's getting more about people than if he reads the next 50 years of Ad Age. You know what I mean? Have you looked at it recently, Eddie? Any of the broadcasting? You know, it's very difficult for me to even, I can't get past the first page and one of those things in my head starts to buzz. Well, I'm sitting today in this very important meeting. Now, it's an uptown meeting and it's one of these meeting places, you know, where they have wall-to-wall carpeting that runs all the way up the walls and runs over the ceiling and starts back down again. You know, that kind of a place. And it's all like a little cocoon all wrapped up and plunked right here in the middle of this madhouse, Manhattan. And all these mad men were sitting around. And they had just returned from a lunch, and you could just hear their girdles popping and their stays. And once in a while, you'd hear some guy's stomach bellows out with that three bottles of fine old wine he's had and 17 martinis. And we're all sitting there with the guy. See, I was not at the luncheon. They were. So they had the glazed look of guys who have just escaped from Michael's Pub after a 17-hour service. You know, those lunches are no longer lunches. They're a religious service. It's a kind of togetherness. A kind of a belief in ham hocks and fillet of sole that far transcends anything that you'll find at most of the Madison Avenue or Park Avenue churches on Sunday. So we're sitting there, and once in a while you hear the stomachs go blah, 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 blah. And of course, one thing they do have in these meeting rooms, they usually have a quiet sound of Muzak playing in the background, so you can not hear the more embarrassing sounds that are really actually what life is about. And all the while, the band is playing T for Two, you know, those things that Muzak comes out. They're not really playing that stuff. It's like it's all muffled through cheesecloth or something. It's just like little snatches of forgotten things. It's going, and everybody's sitting there, and we're talking about a gigantic project. Well, if I had 50 cents for every meeting I have attended in the past 5 years alone here in Manhattan, I could build myself the wildest place you ever saw off the coast of Maine, just for the meetings I have been in that got nowhere beyond the third cup of coffee that the chick brought in. You never hear any more about it the next day, the year after. You know, they just continue around and this stuff. And it's like a gigantic game that's being played by everybody. You wonder how anything ever gets on, you know? I'd like to be once in a meeting where it actually happened, where the movie was produced or the play was done or the show got on television. But it's just a continual thing. And there is a kind of, you know, one of the most important ground rules, if you're going to play the game, is to always at least present the outward appearance to everybody around you that you believe that what everyone is talking about, they're really talking about it. And furthermore, that it's actually going to happen. Well, I'll tell you, J.B., I can see it now. When we come out, 9:30 would be a good time, Channel 7. Now look, here's the way it works. The titles, a long shot down Madison Avenue, you see, at dawn. You got it? And the titles, come on, Socko, there they come. And everybody's sitting there nodding, blah, 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 if you hear a stomach go, you know, and the eyeballs are glazed from the martinis. And it's all a big, wonderful game. And, of course, what's interesting is that they spend a lot of money on this game, too, you know. Somebody will say, let's get up a presentation. Well, then everybody starts that, and it goes on for another 4 months. It's like an enormous game of everybody cutting out dials. They spend money like water, other people's dough, you see. And the part of the game they're playing, the guys that provide the dough, is that they have to believe it's going to happen, too, because it's all tax deductible. And it's one big, wonderful game. And the sponsor comes in from New York. He comes in from places like Cleveland, usually Cincinnati, the soap companies. You know, he flies all the way in, and he sits down and has a serious talk with Rita Gam at a musical. And, you know, that kind of thing. It's all provided. Oh, wonderful. Just a lot of wonderful game. Well, I'm sitting in the middle of the game this afternoon. And they're talking way there. And for a while, I'm following the thread. You know, it's much more difficult to follow the thread of one of these meetings than to follow, say, Waiting for Godot. Waiting for Godot makes a devil a lot more sense than the average meeting in the average ad agency. Literally, it does. It really honestly does, because Godot, at least Beckett, is dealing with something that's out there. These guys are dealing with the kind of a... It's like they're trying to build an enormous air force out of kites. Wet kites, you see, with no string. And we're sitting there, and it's going on and on and on, and this droning of the music is going, and you can hear the girl once in a while, the little thing buzzes on JB's desk, burp, and he picks it up, and he says, yeah. Hey, any of you guys, how about coffee? Any of you guys want anything from downstairs? Yeah, okay. Well, then, of course, we go through the Danish routine, everybody. This is part, it punctuates the meeting, just like a steady obligato, the Danish. Danish? Yeah. Oh, chicken salad. Yeah, hey, Madge, can you order some chicken salad down? Yeah, bring it. You want mayonnaise? Yeah. Okay, yeah, Chucky, yeah, fine, okay. He puts the thing down, and we start. It's a wonderful life, I'll tell you. It's a great life. To those of you who've never been in one of these, it's not as deadly as Jack Lemmon would lead you to believe. I don't think Lemmon's ever been in any of these things. You know, that is another fascinating aspect of it, that when guys in the movies write about it, they've never been in them, you know, really, because they're really doing the movies. They've never sat in these endless, wonderful games that go on along Lexington Avenue at 3, 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Oh, ladies, if you're listening, that's what your old man calls work. That's working. That's what he's doing when he's down here. If he tells you, oh, my God, I'm all just knocked out. Well, he's bloated with Danish and with martinis. And that'll knock anybody out, you know, and it enlarges the liver and everything else. And so he comes in and says, oh, I just got a cork off. And he comes in. Of course, he's half bagged. It's all there, you know. And that's work. That's called work, in case you're wondering what they do down there. Well, I'm sitting in one of these things today, and it's going on, and it's one of those great afternoons. You know, the air conditioning is working perfectly. It's the never land of no climate, too. That's part of it. That lends itself to the Oz aspect. It's never cold. It's never hot. It's never anything, really. And the people are all totally... What I think adds to it is the fact that almost everybody is totally sexless. Indeed. There's nothing more sexless than a really sharp, young, hard-hitting Dartmouth graduate, Madison Avenue assistant junior account exec. He's totally sexless because, you know, if you have a specific sex, that's in itself subversive. It's controversial, literally. It is, because the large numbers of the women in these agencies have no discernible. They're just angry people. They don't have any sexual problems. There's angry people, that's all. And so it's all one big thing, and it's like, do you remember the Mad Tea Party sequence? Well, what sex actually is a dormouse? You know, they're just sitting there with a thing on his head, you know. And an insane rabbit doesn't have any actual thing. So you get the feeling like it's caterpillars that are talking, and oysters are saying things, and old walruses are talking. It's, you know, it goes on, and I'm in the middle of it all there. Of course, I'm the same. Actually, my role is sort of as a carp. I'm a kind of a carp there. And I go quack, quack once in a while, and then they quack, 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 and it goes on and on. Everybody's sort of patting each other on the stomach, and boop, you hear, and then somebody says, how about some Danish? And then up comes the Danish, and two guys always order bicarb. And that bloop, and then you get some more action, and we're sitting there. Lady, if I'm sickening you, I'm just trying to describe to you reality. Speaking of the sick, this is WOR AM and FM New York, talking about Mad Tea Parties. Have you ever sat in on a sales meeting here on Monday? Oh, wow. Well, that's where I got my early training. Right here. I owe a lot to Bob Leader. I owe a lot. I learned how to skate on thin ice. And, oh, yes, I could do beautiful tricks on thin ice, too. As a matter of fact, I learned to skate on plain, ordinary water. No ice at all. Just skate, you know. Skate on air, as a matter of fact. Well, oh yeah, most guys just along Madison Avenue and Lexington Avenue are defying all known laws of gravity. They are staying above water. They are staying in the air with absolute. It's like the bee, you know, how they can't figure out how the bee flies. Well, about 99.9% of the guys along the avenue do not know how they stay in action. They have no talent. They have nothing going for them except a lot of wing flapping. You know, their wings go like mad. And they have defied all known laws of aerodynamics. Well, there I am, see, skating along on the air. And everybody else is skating either on thin ice or they're swimming underwater in petroleum jelly, Vaseline to you. So we're sitting there, and the music is going, and the chick keeps coming in and out with the Danish, and oh, it's a wonderful afternoon. And you know, they have a special kind of lighting now that simulates sunlight in some of these really chic Mad Avenues. Have you seen that new kind of lighting? It simulates the light, and you can adjust it. You see in the back, they have a knob. You can adjust it for twilight over Tahiti. You can adjust it for things like long dawn over Key West, you know, that kind of thing. Or you can have thunder clouds over the Bronx when you really want to have trouble. You know, blah, 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 and everybody, of course, they're working the thing back there. And we're sitting there, and it's going. You know, that's how they get you out of some of these places when the meetings are going on too long and JB doesn't know how to figure out how to throw everybody out of the office because he's got to catch the 3:47 home. Well, you know what they do? The girl, he presses a button, see, and the girl changes the lighting in the place to thunder over the Bronx. And everybody gets a vague feeling of insecurity, you know, and you know you got to get out of there. You don't know why. You don't even know the lighting's changed. And the music subtly changes, you know. Things like the March of the Cataclysmic Giants, you know. it's things like, you know, they take these terrible mood musics from these rotten Class B movies. Something comes out of the speaker, boom, 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 boom. And the next thing you know, boy, you're in that elevator and you're doggone glad to be there, that's all. And JB's on his way to the 3:47. Well, now, you want to know what happened to me today? Well, what happens to you in the middle of one of these insanity sessions is that you will find yourself thinking about other things. Almost invariably, the mind of man is not capable of more than, I'd say, about 9 or 10 milliseconds of attention span on any given piece of chicanery that he's about to perpetrate. That separates the guys that really make it from the rest of us. They are the opposite. Their mind is 1,000% on whatever nuttiness they're about to perpetrate, like make $1 billion, at least 7 hours out of a possible 7.5. You know, they're just like they're insanity. Well, we're the rest of us are us. You know, we're dreaming, things are going on. How many hours a day do you spend just sort of fluttering around in your mind? You know, going from just, you know, like in the woods. You know, you're fluttering around and you keep thinking, wow, wouldn't it be great? Whoopee, woo, wow. And then you fly around a little bit and then you hang on the chandelier a while. You know, and then you talk on the phone and then you scratch your foot and, you know, it's life. That's what's called life, you know, just existing. And then you take a shower for a minute. You're really hung up. You know, looking for the soap. That is a very That is an achievement for a while there. It gives you something that is definite. You look for the soap. Have you ever seen old ladies over at the Horn and Hard Art? They will spend 15 minutes lining up their forks and knives. I saw an old lady one day spread a little paper napkin out. Just she had one little bowl of beans, you know, and she had a little bowl of cabbage or something and a couple of slices of bread and a cup of coffee. Well, she spent 15 minutes getting ready to eat it. Spreading out the little napkin, you know, and she'd lay her little fork down there, and then she gets up and goes over and gets a salt shake and brings it back so it's just right, and she moves her chair back and forth, and then she takes her handkerchief out and wipes the knife off. Well, I'm watching this orchestration of non-activity going on, and she's terribly involved in it, you know. It's really absolutely, because she has absolutely nothing else to involve her skull with. Well, it goes on and on. Well, have you ever been in an ad agency when they're talking about how the credits are going to come on? Exactly the same situation. You know, on and on and on they go. And they talk about the mood music, and they talk about who's going to handle what. And they go on, who's going to make the phone calls. And all the while, nobody's talking about what the show is going to say, you know, because they have no idea, none whatsoever. So we're sitting here, you know, and this little lady is putting the salt in. And I keep thinking about this. Well, this afternoon, I am in the middle of this madhouse, and I'm enjoying it. I must say this. I'm not anti this. I love these things. They're wonderful. It's a folk rite of today, and I'm as religious as anybody. And I certainly enjoy religious experiences along Madison Avenue. It's a kind of dynamic togetherness, a kind of worshiping of something. I can't quite figure it out, but it's there. And J.B. presides over it. Well, at about, I'd say about a half an hour after the thing got underway, something started to nag at my skull. And there, I knew it was happening right away. I knew it was happening. You know, when an actor is walking around on the stage, I can tell you this as an actor, when you're walking around the stage, as long as your concentration is total, you can fool anybody. You can make them think you are Hamlet, as long as your concentration is great. But the minute in the middle of a speech, something distracts you, and you are not, forget it. Well, I'm sitting there, and I got the same look on my face, and, my eyes are just as glazed as anybody else's, and, I'm going quack, quack once in a while, like everyone else. But my concentration was gone, and I did not know it. That's a thing that an actor never knows either, really, that his concentration is gone. It's very hard to know. Well, what was happening was, for some nutty reason, through my mind is going the sound of a tune. Just like that, and I know one thing about it. It was the theme of a soap opera. Well, now that's significant right there. I don't know what a psychiatrist would say about that, or an analyst. I mean, I'm getting soap opera themes while I'm sitting in the middle of a gigantic soap opera episode on Madison Avenue. You know, one thing you must know about these dreams, just like the Mad Tea Party in Alice in Wonderland. These people take these things deadly seriously because it is their work. Remember that, lady. It is their work. And so if the rabbit or if the turtle or if the snails or if the caterpillar misses a cue, they're making all the sounds. If he misses a cue, that is a deadly thing. It would make no difference if he said it. It would all come out coleslaw. But if he misses the cue and no coleslaw comes out, he's really worried. Because everybody else knows, it's all part of a mosaic. So I'm sitting there, and little knowing it, of course, I'm missing cues. Well, this song is going through my mind. It's a soap opera tune. And this minute, all night, it's been bugging me. I will now play it for you on my nose flout. And or at least the opening bars. Listen, do any of you know the name of this thing and what soap opera that it was the heraldic emblem for? Listen. Huh? You got that? That's enough. That's a terrible tune. You've heard enough of it. You know it? Not one of you knows it? You mean you never heard it before? Is it that I'm that rotten of a nose flute player or what? I'll try it again. Listen. Now, they played it faster than that, but I know you've got slow minds. Okay? I'll try it again. All right, got it? La ta 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 la da 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 la da 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 da. It's a very sad tune. All I know is it was a very I sing it sadly. It's a sad tune. You're not supposed to sing a sad tune happily, baby. I mean, that's the only way to sing it. La da 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 la da 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 da. Oh, very sad. And I'm sitting there, and suddenly I'm stricken with this terrible, sad feeling about all those awful people in the soap opera, and I don't remember anything about them, their names or anything. I just know it was hell, their life. And then I begin to feel sorry for myself. I'm sitting there, and I'm going, wah, 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 and they're like, whoop, 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 whoop. And I'm going, da, 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 ya, da, 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 da. And suddenly I see J.B. as old Dr. Scrivens, the evil menace in the small town of Happyville. La da 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 da. And this girl that kept coming in was Gladys Jenkins, solid, hard-hitting young Baptist girl who was, la da 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 da. And this guy sitting across from me was young Jimmy Cleanliver, who as you know, had that awful thing happen to him years ago when his mother died, that long, lingering illness, you recall, when they finally wrote her out of the script. Well, I was sitting there, and I was just in the middle of the whole crummy thing, and I couldn't figure out what's the matter. One more, let's go, Eddie, one, two, three. No. Oh, rock-a-dunk-a-dunk-a-dunk. All right, let's go, come on. Gotta sing. I'm the Sheik of Araby. How bad is it, friend? Your love belongs to me. At night, when you're asleep, baby, into your tent, creep, creep, creep. The stars that shine above will light our way to love. You'll rule this land with me. I'm the Sheik of Araby. All right, all together, gang, let's go. No, it's no use. You can't bring gaiety back into the world. Gone, lost forever. Thank God. And George Rooney. I can sing another chorus of that. How about you want me to blow the flute on the next chorus on that one? I feel like it. Come on, Ed. Come on now. Come on. You got a strong contract. I wouldn't. All right, come on. Bring it up there. Blow pretty good flute. Pretty good nose flout there. Ever since I was 9, I've been not commercial. You know, I wish I'd learned to play the accordion. Or the ukulele or something. Well, you know, speaking of being non-commercial, I'm going to forget that. None of you know the name of the tune, so I'm going to forget it. Try to forget it. Very difficult, though. Very difficult. I'm speaking of soap operas, I think at this point, it is wise for us to point out to you that the next segment of tonight's opus is sent to you as a public service of WOR. Oh, yes, I want it logged as such. A true public service. I think it's more of a public service than asking you to join the Marines, because I don't think you're going to join the Marines anyway if I do, and that's called public service on the radio. You're going to come on, but join the Marines, yes. Any of you guys from 28 to 34 that got rocks in the head, join the Marines. You'll love it. Hump, 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 hump. Oh, together, let's go. Well, that's called public service here at WOR. We mean well, though. I say one thing for us. There's not a mean bone in our body. There's a lot of sneaky bones, but not a mean bone, actually. All we want is a lot of money. And we want a lot of love, and we want to be able to get away with a lot of stuff. That's all. And none of it hurts you, actually. None of you. You're getting it free. Crying out loud. What more do you want? That's the truth. You know, people will complain loudly about anything they get free. 35,000 letters will come in demanding that everybody on the staff be fired every 3 days from louts that are sitting out there getting it free. You know, they're sitting out there, they're cabbage heads. And not one of them, if he goes down and watches a Broadway musical and pays $40 a shot to see this turkey, would ever think and demand, I want Geraldine Page to get fired. Fire her, rotten, terrible. However, he just goes home thinking that he missed the point, all right? All right, that's just a very loud lady. I don't mind loud ladies. They're everywhere today. So it's real life. She's reflecting. What else do you have in there? Did you find out the name of the tune, baby? Not one of them. You mean they never even heard of the soap opera? Ta 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 ta. Well, there it is again. I think I'm the only living American who has observed America. I'm really beginning to believe this. Seriously, I hate to say that. Now, I don't say that I've observed it. I just remember all the crud. Nobody else. There isn't there, and I cannot help it. And it's not that I'm 1,000 years old. I have a memory that will not enable me to throw away the junk. You know how some people have their house full of all kinds of crud from the ceiling to the floor, stuff they'll never use. It's down in the basements and the garage. It's buried under the privet hedges everywhere. Well, that's the kind of memory I got. I remember the themes of folk. I'll tell you, who can stand there right now and look me right in the eye and give me the theme of Lorenzo Jones? Well, what good is it ever? You can. All right, what's the name of it? You can home it, but you can't tell me the name of it. And furthermore, you cannot tell me what Lorenzo Jones's business was. What did he do? A barber? Oh, boy, you forget it, baby. Huh? Oh, you guys are all off a lumberyard. Everybody, Americans, do you know that during the war, do you know what they did out on the islands during the war? That when the Japs, you see, a lot of Japanese learned how to speak English better than most of the louts who came from Queens, you know? So it was very hard to tell that when you're hiding in a foxhole, you know, and then some guy comes up and says, "Hey, Mac, you got a cigarette?" He could have been, you know, he's a corporal in the Japanese Marines. The next thing you know, you get a shiv in your neck. Well, so I'm telling you something serious. They had to invent a series of passwords that only an American would know. And so here's the kind of passwords they'd say. Say, "Hey, Mac," here's just what they'd say. "Hey, Mac, who sponsored Jack Armstrong?" Well, if there was a dead silence, you better start getting out your bayonet. And the proper Americans are, "Wheaties, Wheaties." "Okay, Mac, okay, come on in." Yeah, that's the kind of stuff they did. Did you know that during the war? All that. And here I'm doing the same thing to you, and you're all flunking. Do you realize what I would do if I had a grenade now? I'd lay it in that control room, boy. I am surrounded by spies. I'll bet all you guys were trained by Izvestia. I'll bet the whole crew, you haven't been here longer than 1953. Not one of you. You tell me what Lorenzo Jones did? Oh, boy. What was the name of Lorenzo's wife? Oh, no, not Mrs. Jones. I'm sorry. She was never once, as far as I know, referred to as Mrs. Jones on that. Believe me, you know what would happen? If I'm laying in a foxhole, I says, "What was the name of Lorenzo Jones's wife?" And some guy says, "Mrs. Jones." Uh-oh, pull the pin. Boom, that's it. Socko. Oh, I want a bunch of louts. We do not have Americans anymore. All right. Wise guy. Is there one of you that can give me the name, the theme of a terrible, a real drippy soap opera, a real tearjerker named Mary Marlin? Everybody, I'm amazed at how everybody gets everything all balled up. The next thing is a Mary Marlin backstage wife. That is another one. You see, you're getting everything all screwed up, all balled up, all the way down the line. I will say it again now. Let's try it again. Mary Marlin. And it was one of the very few that used a classical piece of music as its theme. Classical, you know, serious music. Classical, serious music. And believe it or not, the piece of music was written by Beethoven. Pretty good man there. Of course, he was in public domain, so that made him particularly interesting for a theme. You know, you never had to pay anything on that one. Yeah. All right. Well, tonight, I think what we'll have to do is talk about how education comes about. And since it's quite evident that most of you, I assume that most of us listening tonight are Americans, right? Put up your hands, all of you that are listening tonight that are Americans, that were grown up and went to schools where they had drum majors, you know, and they had football players, you know, the whole jazz, you know what I mean, the bands, everybody, we're all there, you got it? And Ovaltine you drank, and you had popsicles, you know, the whole thing, the whole schlemu, it's all American. Well, okay. Now, have you been reading recently in the papers about this American lady track team that has been falling all over the world on their respective you-know-whats? Have you been reading about that? Oh, boy, have they been laying eggs. Everywhere they go, you know, I've been having a terrible time. And have you ever noticed that have you been reading about how the Russian track stars, you know, these guys that jump 7 feet, 5.5 inches, you know, they train 24 hours a day, 100 years on end, and they're made of solid steel and gristle and bone? Well, it's that kind of nuttiness that is against the American grain. Americans always want to do it the easy way and cheat somewhere along the line, and that's what apparently is happening to these chicks. You know, as I say, we're good Americans, and that's the way we do it. We're instant people. We want to become instant best-selling authors, for example. We want to become an instant movie star. People want to have instant fame. That's what we want to do here. We want to be instantly 17 feet tall or whatever it is. How many books do you see on the stand that says, you can lose 30 pounds in just 10 days? Oh, boy. You know, and in just 15 days, you can be dynamic, hard-hitting, and on the way to the chairmanship of your company. That kind of thing. 15 days, 7 minutes a day. That's a typical American idea. Only in America would they have 7-minute-a-day piano courses. For just 7 minutes a day, for only 3 days a week, you can learn to play a piano beautifully with our new 5-color slide rule device. Just place it over your keyboard, and in just 5 minutes, you'll be going, bum, 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 bum. Yes, you'll be the hit of the party. Well, that's only in America. They would never conceive of that in, say, a place like Brussels. They think of learning how to play the piano, you know, they immediately think of guys like William Capel, you know. They don't think of sitting down and playing, yes, sir, that's my baby, with one hand. Well, that's a very different concept. Well, you see, now, what I'm leading into is that I'm a good American kid. Now, of course, Americans all cheat in one way or another. Oh yes, we do. We all cheat in one way or another, and all good Americans have agreed between one another not to notice each other's cheating. That's the game, you know. If you don't notice mine, I won't notice yours, and we'll get along fine. It'll work out beautifully, and nobody's going to be the wiser. It's going to be working out fine. But the minute one guy notices another guy's cheating, then a whole chain begins. A whole chain reaction sets up, as you know, Al, in the newsroom. Counter charges come back and forth, and they fly till finally this fantastic investigation, and everybody winds up in jail. Actually, what we do in America is we stop investigating at a certain point. If you notice, a lot of investigations sort of peter out. They catch two or three little guys. One or two guys get thrown into the jug, and you know, there's a few little arguments of testimony, and then all of a sudden it disappears. No more, no more, no more, no more. Well, no more. Well, that's the American way, and in fact, it's the world's way, really, if it were to be brought out. But we're about the only country in the world that maintains a high level of verbal smokescreen. We're about the only country in the world that keeps hollering things like slogans, you know, like, justice, peace, equality, democracy. We keep yelling those things. They don't say that stuff in France. They don't, you know. They don't bother to say that stuff in places like Belgium or Holland or anything. You know, the life is life. That's the way you live it, see. But over here, you know, we believe that slogans really mean what they say, you know. And we're always mad when we find out they don't. Well, I'm a kid, you see. And I'm just beginning to learn about a few things. And one of the things that I was learning about at that time was the ability that I have, me, just being another American, to figure that I am above any normal disaster. Most of us, you know, when we read about guys getting killed in automobile wrecks, we don't think about ourselves. It's never us that gets killed. Oh, it's always some other clown, and he somehow loused up. You know, I mean, he flub up. You know, he got cancer there. Other than that, though, well, he always was an unsuccessful type, you know. And that is why Americans have this dream world around us. We never think of disaster in terms of ourselves, nor reality, really, in terms of ourselves. It's something that happens on the Ron Cochran show to other people somewhere else. And it's a good show, and the commercial comes on, and then you watch the late movie, and you cork off. Yeah, that's right. That's the end of it. Well, I'm a kid, see. And I'm living in a household that believes firmly in that kind of thing. That's the American thing. And I'm going to school. I'm a sophomore in high school, and we had, among other things, in this high school, it was a gigantic high school, it was about 3,000 guys, we had a track team. And guess who was number three man on a four-man cross-country team. Yep, that's right. That's right. Old friendly Fred here. And guess who was number four man on this four-man cross-country team? My old buddy Flick. Well, we made the team. And actually, I'll tell you this secretly, for those of you who have never run cross-country running is, in a way, the most difficult kind of running, and in a way, also the easiest kind, because you don't have to be really fast or anything. You just got to be dumb. You do. You just have to run long and hard. It's like a guy who can just sit there and scratch himself longer than anybody else without getting tired of it. That's the kind of thing. You just go clunk, 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 clunk. You run. You don't have to run fast. You don't have to run. You gotta be very, very dogged. That's the expression, I guess, is doggedness. It's not even a talent. The best cross-country runners have no talent whatsoever. They just have more doggedness than anybody else. I learned that. Now I'm saying that, you see, justifying all the guys that beat me. Well, one afternoon, we're about to have our first major meet. We have been practicing, you know, up this time we run cross-country. And we had about a 15-mile course. Oh, yeah, we'd run like the track meet would start. And very few events in sport are as lonely as a cross-country event. Because nobody cheers cross-country runners or anything. Not a bit of cheering at all, see. That everybody else is down there in the arena. You know, they're running the 100, the 220, and the 220 hurdles and all that, and the quarter mile, and everybody's yelling, and the pole vaulters. They're the real showboats, you know, and the high jumpers are the real showboats of the track world, and everybody is watching them. Well, if you guys who go to track will observe, you will notice just before everything starts to happen, a large group of guys seem to leave the stadium by the other end. Well, those are the cross-country runners. They are leaving. And after you have gotten in your car and have gone home and you're heading towards Trenton or Hegwisch or wherever it is you go, a large group of guys are now straggling out in the darkness. They are arriving back at the stadium. And nobody is there to cheer nothing. You see, that's the cross-country runners. They have run through the garbage heaps. They've run out through the swamps and every place else. And now, out of the 29 guys that started, 17 are finishing. Well, now I'm about to tell you about the eight who didn't. We have got our first big track meet. This is old Shep now. He's learning about life. And the day before the track meet, our coach, who is a tough son of a gun, and by the way, who's a top college coach now, and he's grizzled. He's got one of these beards, you know. This guy has played tackle on a Big Ten football team, and he was an All-American. He was a shot putter. He was everything, you know. He was a nine-letter man. He's a real tough son of a gun and a professional athlete. So he says, all right, one thing about you guys, especially you guys that are on the cross-country team, I don't want you to eat nothing. I don't want you to eat nothing before that meet. I don't want you to touch anything. In the morning, I want you to have one glass of milk. A glass of water, and when you get down here, we're going to give you a couple of vitamin tablets, some dextrose tablets, and that's it. You can eat after the meet, right? Well, being a good American, I do not believe that any disaster ever strikes me, so I'm sitting there, yep, you know, and of course, at that moment, I'm feeling very, very righteous. I have just had my lunch consisting of four peanut butter sandwiches and two bottles of Pepsi-Cola and a Twinkie bar. You see, so I'm feeling as though this is no problem at all, see? Well, the next day I get up and I have my glass of milk. My mother says, come on, eat, you know? She come on, no, we're running today. Running today against George Rogers Clark. And, of course, in the morning, I never was much of an eater in the morning. Lunchtime comes, nothing, see? And I have a glass of water. The meet starts at 3. We are going to be excused at 2. So at 2 o'clock, Flick and I are walking down the hall. We walk out of the school. We wind up outside on our way to the track stadium. Across the street is Igloo's. Well, one cheeseburger, two strawberry malts later, Flick and Shep line up. We're feeling great. 27 other guys are down there crouched with us. We're looking off into the distance. Boom! The gun goes. We start running. I'm feeling fantastic. I'm running along. You know, I'm feeling great. I'm way out there in front. The guys are strung out behind me. I'm running along. My number is flopping back at me. I'm a block away from the stadium. Now I'm cutting through the woods and over through the park. Flick is running just a little bit ahead of me and to my right. We are pacing ourselves beautifully. Fine long-distance runners. Guys are running behind me. 1 mile goes by. All of a sudden, I see Flick. He makes a sharp cut to the right, and I hear, Flick is flat out. I turn. I run past. What's the matter, Flick? All of a sudden, There is a bubbling sound. It's coming up. I can hear guys from George Rogers Clark behind me, guys from Tech ahead of me, and without any warning, out of my ears. Ooh, 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 ah, ooh, ah, ooh, ooh. Oh, down I go. Oh, I can't tell you. I'm out. I'm out like a light. Out like a light. It seemed like for 2 hours, all I saw was feet going past me.
Sanford Man's Earth Band from somewhere in Africa, the mid-1980s, I believe. Apartheid time was when that album was around. It was a minor hit for him. The Runner. And that brings us to the close of this episode of the Dustbin of History. Next week, of course, probably very much like this week, another episode of Nightfall, more Vanishing Point, and another Lost Gene Shepherd episode. And the best thing about leaving here tonight, number one, I got the show nearly finished before it goes on the air. That's always a plus. But number two, it's going to be 20 degrees cooler than when I came in when I got home. And it's going to stay that way for a couple of days. Thank God. You know, when I woke up today, I drank a gallon and a half of liquid in the 2 hours before I came to work. Oh, and last night, going home at 5 a.m., it was brutally hot at 5 a.m. before the sun came up. It was in the 90s still, and so humid. So good riddance to this heat wave. Hope you enjoy the next week when it will be cooler, and I hope you join me here next week for another episode of the Dustbin of History, or Sunday night from 8 until 10 for the Golden Age of Radio here on WBAI New York. Oh, and visit our Facebook page, The Dustbin of History, on Facebook, The Dustbin of History, and read the full cast and credits of all our programs, see illustrations, and join the happy throng. I welcomed a few more kids from South Africa this week, because somehow they just flock and congregate to that page. Don't know why. They won't tell me, but I hope they enjoy the show, and I hope you did too. I'm Max Schmid, your curator and janitor here in the Dustbin of History. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned for K-Wave USA coming up next. Emerson Lunger with K-Pop, the world of K-Pop, exposed for you here on WBAI New York.
Hi, George. Well, finished with the show. What do you want me to do now?
Did you have a good time in there?
Yeah. Oh, boy, it was fun.
Great. How'd you like to do it every day?
Yeah. That would be neat. Hey, wait a minute. Do I still get to be the janitor?
Sure.
Oh, okay. It's a deal. Well, I will feel that.
I'm Max Schmid, staff representative to WBAI's local station board, inviting you to the next OSB meeting, Wednesday, August 10th at 7 p.m. The meeting, accessible to the public, includes an opportunity for public comment. The fastest and easiest way to join the meeting is by using the link on the Pacific calendar at kpftx.org. And on the WBAI website, you can also access the meeting by calling 929-205-6099. That's 929-205-6099. And enter this meeting ID, 922-457-2995. Once again, 922-457-2995. The password is 995.